All right, so let's dive into a scenario that I bet a lot of our listeners can relate to. You're a landlord, maybe you've got a couple properties, trying to keep things simple, right? Mm. You let your tenants handle finding their own roommates. It seems pretty logical, keeps you out of the day-to-day, but what if that tenant, well, what if they decide to turn away a perfectly good applicant for, let's just say, some not so great reasons?
Yeah.
You know, reasons that maybe cross the line.
Yeah, you're hitting on a really important point there. And it's a situation that more landlords find themselves in than you might think. The question is, are you, the landlord, on the hook for that discrimination, even though you weren't the one doing the interviewing? Could you be held liable for your tenant's actions?
That's a big question, and it's one I'm sure a lot of landlords out there are wondering about.
And it's a tricky one. The answer, unfortunately for some, could be yes. It all comes down to this concept of agency in the legal world. It's a bit of a hidden trap that can really trip people up.
Agency. Okay, now that's one of those legal terms that always makes my head spin a little. Can you break it down for us? Like, imagine we're first-year law students trying to grasp the basics.
Sure, absolutely. Let's demystify it. Basically, agency boils down to one person having the authority to act on behalf of another. Think of it like, well, a real estate agent, right? They're acting as your agent, making decisions about your property.
Okay, yeah, I see that. Makes sense. So it sounds like to establish agency, you need some kind of formal contract, right? Like something in writing?
Not necessarily. That's where things get a little complicated. Agency can actually be created through actions and conduct, even if there's no written agreement. It all hinges on whether one person has the power to act for another, and this is key, with their knowledge and consent. And that consent, it can be implied. And that's where landlords can sometimes get into trouble.
Ah, I see where you're going with this.
Mm-hmm.
So how does all this agency stuff actually play out in a real-world situation between a landlord and a tenant?
Yeah. Well, there's a case that really highlights all of this. It's called Maria v. Slakey, and it's a classic example of how this concept of agency can really sneak up on you.
Okay, I'm all ears. Lay it on us.
Mm-hmm.
Who are the main players and what went wrong?
So this case revolves around a landlord, Linda Slakey. She owned a 6-bedroom house, all rented out. Her tenants were always the ones responsible for finding new roommates whenever someone moved out. Slakey had the final say, of course, on who moved in, but for the most part, she didn't really get involved in the process.
So she was taking a pretty hands-off approach, letting the tenants run the show, basically.
Exactly. And that hands-off approach, well, it came back to bite her in this case. See, one of her tenants, a guy named Paul Norris, he was in charge of finding a new roommate. A woman named Creedy Aurora applied, but Norris, he rejected her. And his reason, he didn't want 3 Indian women living in the house. So we're already 2 living there.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's some pretty blatant discrimination right there.
It was. And even when Slakey found out about it, she chose not to step in. She basically upheld Norris's decision, even though it wasn't hers to make in the first place.
So even though Slakey didn't personally discriminate, she still got in trouble because her tenant did, all because of this agency concept.
Exactly. The court basically said that a jury could find Slakey liable for housing discrimination based on this implied agency relationship with Norris. Even though she wasn't directly involved in selecting the roommate, her hands-off approach and the fact that she had final approval power, well, it created that agency.
So just by giving Norris the power to choose a roommate, she also gave him the power to, in a way, act on her behalf.
You got it. The court made it really clear that it's the actual conduct, the dynamics of the relationship that matters, not just some formal agreement. It's a pretty tough lesson for landlords.
I bet this has landlords everywhere a little nervous. So does this mean that they can never, ever let their tenants handle roommate searches?
That's a great question, and it's a worry a lot of landlords have. It doesn't mean landlords have to micromanage every single roommate decision, but what it does mean is that they need to understand the risks and take steps to make sure discrimination doesn't happen.
So sticking your head in the sand and hoping for the best is not a good strategy here.
Definitely not. Ignorance of the law is never a good defense, especially in a situation like this. And there's another interesting twist to this case that I think is worth pointing out.
Oh, there's more?
Yep. Slakey actually tried to argue that she should be exempt from liability because of something called the Mrs. Murphy exemption.
The Mrs. Murphy exemption. What is that? Some kind of legal loophole for landlords who are extra nice to their tenants?
Not quite. It's a specific legal provision that applies to very specific types of housing. We're talking about small owner-occupied dwellings, like imagine renting out a spare room in your own home.
Ah, okay. Like a classic bed and breakfast situation, sort of.
Exactly. But here's why that argument failed miserably for Slaky. First off, she didn't live in the house she was renting out. And second, it had 6 units, way more than the exemption allows.
So this Mrs. Murphy escape hatch, it's a pretty narrow one.
Very narrow. It's a good reminder that these legal exemptions have very specific requirements. Landlords shouldn't rely on them without really understanding the details.
All right, so circling back to agency, what can landlords actually do to protect themselves and avoid ending up in a situation like Slaky's?
Well, there are some practical steps they can take. First and foremost, having a clear written policy that specifically says discrimination is a no-go, that's crucial. And it's not enough to just have it written down somewhere. You need to make sure all your tenants know about it.
So no more just assuming everyone's on the same page. It needs to be spelled out, black and white.
Absolutely. Landlords also need to be really careful about who they're renting to in the first place. And I'm not just talking about credit scores and references here. It's about getting a sense of their character, you know, looking for any red flags that might suggest they could have some biases.
So a little bit of detective work is involved.
You could say that. It's about being proactive and choosing tenants who are going to understand and actually uphold fair housing principles.
What else can landlords do to cover their bases?
Training. Landlords need to give their tenants clear instructions on fair housing laws and how to conduct interviews without discriminating. Give them the knowledge and tools to make good decisions.
So knowledge is power in this case, for sure. What about documentation? Is that important?
Hugely important. Landlords need to keep detailed records of every single interaction they have with tenants and applicants. That means applications, interview notes, emails, any reports of discrimination. Everything.
So if a legal issue comes up, they've got that paper trail to back them up.
Precisely. And finally, if there are any reports of discrimination, landlords need to act fast. Address the situation head on. Ignoring it or hoping it'll go away on its own, well, that's just asking for trouble.
So big picture, be proactive, know the rules, and don't be afraid to step in when you need to.
You nailed it. Before we jump into the future and all that, you know, I think we should really underline how important this Maria v. Slaky case is. It's not just, you know, some obscure legal thing that nobody ever thinks about. It has big consequences for landlords and tenants in the real world.
No, I totally agree. It seems like a pretty big deal. What exactly makes it such a landmark decision?
Well, one thing is that it really clarified this whole idea of agency and fair housing law. It made it super clear that landlords can be held responsible for discrimination, even if they're not the ones actually doing the discriminating.
Right, like we were talking about, because of that agency thing, it's like a legal domino effect or something.
Yeah, exactly. The court basically drew a line in the sand and said, look, landlords can't just pass off these tasks and then pretend they had nothing to do with it if their tenants do something discriminatory. They have a real duty to prevent it, even when they're not directly involved in picking tenants or roommates.
So basically, no more pleading ignorance, and landlords have got to be proactive, not reactive.
You got it. And the implications of this case, they go way beyond just picking roommates. We're talking about any time a landlord lets someone act for them, a property manager, a leasing agent, even a tenant showing the place to potential renters.
So that opens up a lot of possibilities for liability.
It does. And that's exactly why things like clear policies, training for anyone involved in renting out a property, and really thorough documentation are so important. And, you know, you mentioned technology earlier. The impact of tech on all this is huge.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I'm super curious how technology is shaking things up in fair housing, you know, for better or for worse.
Well, just think about how people find apartments and roommates these days. It's pretty much all online now through sites like Craigslist, Facebook, Zillow, and all these different apps.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's not like the old days of circling ads in the newspaper anymore.
Nope, not at all. And while these platforms are really convenient, they also come with new challenges when it comes to fair housing.
Like what kind of challenges? Can you give us some examples?
Well, one of the biggest things people are worried about is algorithms. You know, those sets of instructions that decide what information people see and how it's presented. There's a growing concern that these algorithms could be making existing biases worse, even if it's not intentional.
Yeah, that is kind of unsettling. How could that even happen?
Well, imagine an algorithm that's designed to show you listings based on, say, your past searches or what it thinks your demographics are. So if someone mostly looks at places in neighborhoods that are mainly white, the algorithm might just keep showing them similar listings, which means they might not see places in more diverse areas.
So even without anyone meaning to do harm, the technology itself could create these subtle roadblocks to fair housing.
Exactly. And then there's online communication, which is a whole other thing. It's a lot easier for people to say discriminatory things when they're hiding behind a screen, you know, sending texts or emails. It's not as personal as face-to-face, and there's less accountability.
Yeah, I see what you mean. It's a lot easier to say something you wouldn't say to someone's face when you're online.
Right. And that leads to some really important questions about how we make sure things are fair in this digital age.
Such as?
Yeah.
What kind of questions are we talking about?
Well, for one thing, how do we hold these platforms accountable when discrimination happens on their websites? Do they have an obligation to actively monitor what's going on, flag listings that are suspicious, or even come up with algorithms that are more fair?
Those are tough questions. It's like we're in this uncharted territory now with all this technology.
We are, and there aren't easy answers. Another big question is, how do we teach landlords and tenants about the subtleties of fair housing in the online world?
Yeah, it's like we need a whole new set of skills for navigating all this, a digital literacy for renting and finding a place to live.
I think you're right, and this is where lawyers really come in. We need to be the ones who understand these new issues, advise clients on how to deal with them, and fight for policies that promote fair housing in this digital space.
So it's not just about knowing the law as it is now, but also anticipating how it needs to change to keep up with technology.
Precisely. This Mari Vislaky case may be over 20 years old now, but what it says is more relevant than ever in today's world, which is so driven by technology.
That's a good point. It's a reminder that we always need to be on guard about fair housing, no matter what kind of tech we're using.
Exactly. And speaking of technology, you know, there are actually some really cool developments that could actually help promote fair housing, not make things worse.
Oh, really? Now that's something I want to hear more about. So you were saying there's some tech out there that could actually make things better when it comes to fair housing. I gotta say, that's a pretty hopeful thought after all the potential problems we've been talking about.
Yeah, it is. There's so much innovation going on right now, and some of it has real potential to make the housing market more transparent and fair for everyone.
Okay, you've got my attention. What kind of tools are we talking about here?
One area that's looking really promising is algorithms that are specifically designed to spot and reduce bias in housing searches.
So kind of like fighting fire with fire, right? Using algorithms to combat those potentially biased algorithms we talked about earlier.
Yeah, exactly. You could put it that way. These new algorithms, they're trained on massive amounts of data to learn how to identify patterns of discrimination, whether it's intentional or not.
And how do they actually go about reducing that bias? What do they actually do?
Well, they can work in a few different ways. For instance, they might change the order of search results so that listings from a variety of neighborhoods are shown to a wider range of people. Or they could flag listings that use language that might be considered discriminatory, even if it's not super obvious.
So it's like having a built-in fairness checker for housing searches.
That's a great way to put it. There are also tools that use data to figure out exactly where housing discrimination is happening the most, which lets policymakers and advocacy groups focus their efforts where they're needed most.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Having that kind of data-driven insight can be super helpful when you're trying to tackle big systemic problems like discrimination.
Absolutely. And another really cool development is the use of virtual reality and 3D modeling to create more immersive and fair virtual tours of properties.
Wow, that sounds pretty futuristic. What does that have to do with fair housing?
Well, traditional virtual tours, they can be kind of misleading sometimes. They might focus on a property's good points and downplay anything negative, which can give potential renters a skewed view. But with VR and 3D modeling, you can create a much more realistic and complete picture of a property.
So everyone's getting a fair and accurate representation of what the place is actually like, no matter who they are or where they're searching from.
Exactly. This technology has the potential to really even things out and reduce the chances of discrimination based on things like race, disability, or family status.
That's great to hear that tech can actually be a force for good in this area. It seems like it can be both a problem and a solution when it comes to fair housing.
You hit the nail on the head. It really all boils down to how we create and use it. And that's why it's so crucial for legal professionals to stay on top of these advancements and push for their responsible and ethical use.
Well, we've certainly covered a lot in this deep dive, from all the legal ins and outs of agency to how fair housing is changing in our digital world. Any final thoughts for our listeners before we sign off?
I would just emphasize that the fight for fair housing, it's an ongoing thing. It's not something you achieve. And then just check off the list. We've got to keep learning, keep adapting, and keep pushing ourselves to create a housing market that's truly just and fair for everyone.
Couldn't have said it better myself. And to everyone listening out there, whether you're a landlord, a tenant, or a legal eagle, remember that we all have a part to play in making sure that everyone has access to safe, affordable, and discrimination-free housing.
I agree wholeheartedly.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time, stay curious and stay informed.